This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
The man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a rain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on an awesome man. He does a lot of things. He is a musician. You may know him from Backwards. He is also the founder and owner of the Ripperverse comic book series. He is a social, political, cultural commentator, YouTuber. He is not me, for all the people who are confused. You know, people mix us up all the time, but this is my long-lost brother from another mother, Eric July. Welcome to the show.
Man, what's up? It's good to be back, man. I appreciate you. Yeah, you're dead on, man. We get mixed up all the time. Like, I'm not him.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, I can see the confusion. You know what I mean? Like, you know, black guy, beard, flat peak hat, you know, libertarian, sensible, you know, like basically same person.
Yeah, true. That's very true.
Awesome, man. Eric, bro, for people who are not familiar with who you are and what you do, tell them a little bit about yourself, bro.
Yeah, to your point, I've been doing this, being in the commentary space for a long time. Really, music was my biggest thing. You know, with Backwards, I was in another band previously as well that saw a lot of success. And then we got, you know, to the point to where we're at now. And that is, I do whatever I want to on any given morning, where I can just say, you know what, I feel like doing a video on this, or I want to start my own comic book company, or I want to do that. And I've kind of had that freedom. I've been afforded that freedom to be able to do that thanks to the supporters and all. So obviously comic book stuff is what we're really knocking it out the park with right now with Ripperverse. And ISUM number 2 just launched. We had a successful almost $4 million campaign, pre-order campaign for ISUM 1. A lot of returning customers, which means a lot of people are thoroughly enjoying what it is that we do. So, you know, that's what it's about. That's exactly what it's about for me. So I'm just glad to be in this position, blessed to be in this position. But it is very liberating to be able to wake up and decide whatever I want to do is what I get to do. And not a lot of people get to say that they can do that.
That's dope, man. Tell us more about the journey to getting there, man, because with someone like yourself, honestly, I mean, anyone who reaches a level of success, whether they're a creative entrepreneur or not, people often just, you know, people discover you or they see you where you are currently, right? And they make all these assumptions and people like to think, oh, you know, you just sort of magically appeared here one day and dropped a comic book and made millions of dollars and, you know, you just showed up yesterday kind of thing. Obviously, this is not the situation. It's not the case for myself, for yourself. It's not the case for pretty much anybody who's been successful independently. So tell me a little bit about the journey getting things to this stage.
Yeah, so and to your point, it's you get a lot of people that are under this wrongful assumption that something like this just happens. You know what I mean? And I have people say this right now. It's like the only reason he's seeing success is because he's successful. And I'm like, that makes all the sense in the world, but it doesn't. But no, on a serious note, like I started my YouTube channel. I was 16 years old, right? Just doing the math, I'm 33 now. So it's a long time for me to be on the platform. It was the year or after YouTube even started, because YouTube was, that was 2005, right? And next year, here I come. So it was one of those things that I did a lot of work with. I had been grinding left to right to really try to make something like this happen. And, you know, it started with doing the YouTube videos, whether it be in kind of the hip hop scene, which is really what I was doing first and foremost. And, you know, that kind of changed into definitely once I graduated high school into wanting to pursue my love for like more rock based music. So I started to implement that into my stuff. So I was doing like that was doing vocal covers, really. That was really what kind of sent my YouTube to the stratosphere was YouTube, like doing vocal covers, metal covers and stuff. So that turned into one thing, which turned into another. And, you know, that was also, you had 2008, 2012, Ron Paul kind of getting people reignited with the Liberty. Though that wasn't my introduction. I got to see kind of that and, you know, that enthusiasm around it. So I wanted to speak more. And, you know, that turned into commentary. And what I think I did a good job of doing was leveraging each individual audience that I would get that were coming from these different pockets and corners of the internet to be successful in the next thing. So the hip hop stuff to the metal stuff to the commentary stuff to the comic book thing. So, you know, you can ask any given fan of any different product that I provide, and they like, well, they came along because they found me through this. So they found me through that. And it was it when you build a rapport with your audience, which I think it's not easy to do that because some people come and go. It's you know, trendy type of kind of thing. But I got an audience full of people that rock with me for me. And I think after delivering on so many products, it becomes a second nature to them to support your next venture. And that's certainly a blessing to be in that position. But it wasn't anything that happened overnight. And I say even to this day, despite making the millions of dollars, I'm working harder now than I have in my entire life. You know what I mean? It's just what it is. So it's a legitimate grind and it never ends for me. And you know, it's, I know people don't like it as they think of it more of as a cliche when you talk about hard work, but you know, I'm up early, grind late, back at it again. And I'm doing that every day. And I have been for the better part of my life. And I think that has a lot to do with the results it is that we have.
Yeah. I mean, so from starting your YouTube channel, this is a 17-year journey to get to where things are right now. I think it's important for people to hear that and understand that. Both of us started our careers in the realms of what we're doing in our teenage years. Mm-hmm. And we're both now 30-something.
Yep.
And so for anyone who is listening or watching this, who is just thinking, oh, you know, I've been doing something for 6 months, or I've been doing something for 1 year, 2 year, even 5 years, and you're not seeing stuff, you know, popping off as quickly as you want to, or blowing up, or reaching X amount of followers, subscribers, bank account, whatever it is. It is a grind. It's a grind. And I really don't think people don't get this. Like people really do not understand it. And you can see in the way that individuals respond to certain things that they just do not understand the legwork and the blood, sweat, and tears of going through it all, right? Whether in each aspect, right? Making videos for nobody, recording podcasts for nobody, playing to empty venues, mm-hmm. putting mm-hmm. out albums and singles and not a lot of people are paying attention or caring or listening, dropping merch and people aren't buying it. You know, people just see the here and the now. So I think it's really important to go back on these stories and just help people put it in perspective and gain the understanding of how long it takes to build something like what you've been building. And each step, as you said, each step matters so much towards the next one. You can't just kind of jump to the end point, right? Yep. You have to go through each of the steps. And something that I love that you do, bro, and something that is so important and something I'm seeing that is, it's funny because a lot of people are afraid of this, but this is actually the thing that is making independent content creators so incredibly powerful. And I think people like yourself, you're going to gain so much more steam in this, is simply two things. And this is that you don't lie and you seek the truth. That's it. When I think of the independent content creators blowing up in all these different streams, people who have like true authentic audiences, who aren't just fair weather fans, who like you for you, who will support you, whether you drop a book, you make merch, you put out an album, you act in a movie, whatever it is, they're going to support you because they like you. I think of someone like a Joe Rogan, right? Joe Rogan's never written a book. I don't think he's ever like dropped a merch line. He could write a book tomorrow and you already know people are going to buy it. Why? Because they like him. Why? Because he doesn't lie and he seeks the truth, right? It doesn't mean everyone's going to have the same political views or social views or whatever, but what I find with all these creators whom I massively respect and who I see doing well is it's true authenticity. It's just like, look, this is who you are. This is what you stand for. You're not trying to mislead people. You're not trying to, you know, there's so many ways you can make quicker money or like do things quicker by just being disingenuous. You see it all the time. All the people who are attacking you, they're all, I see all the time. Like, it's funny that you even reply, but I'm like, they're always disingenuous.
Yeah.
Right. Time. Like that's the difference. It's not even that you, a political disagreement. It's just like, you are an honest person and these people coming at you. I'm like, these are not honest people. These are not people who are charitable and who are, you know, there's always some type of deception with it. And you see the same thing. Why is mainstream media losing ground? Why are people no longer trusting these giant corporations and politicians? Because they're just lying. People are seeing the deception. And I think that the time is coming where you can no longer just keep deceiving people. You know, I think they've been able to get away with this for a long time. But I personally think, you know, and some people will disagree with me because they got the doomer mindset. But I personally think we're in the era of authenticity. I think people who are just true, who are honest, who stand by their values, who have principles, who are just keep it real with their audience and with people, I think they're going to inherit the future, man.
I don't disagree. I mean, I say this all the time about, you know, I'm more white-pilled as I've ever been because of exactly that. We're seeing, you know, everything's been accelerated. And you know, because, you know, you came up in the game around the same time that I did. And it's different from the mixtape out the trunk era from even now, right? Because the technology alone has allowed us to get a direct line of sight with an audience that we just simply couldn't. We couldn't do that back in the gap. We can now. And that in itself, I think, has, as people get more of that authenticity and they learn to know who it is, they're paying more attention to where their dollar's going. And the folks that are just being real, doesn't mean you can't make mistakes, but the people that are being real, so as long as people know you're in it for the right reasons, they know you're being honest with them, you know, they're gonna back you. They're gonna support the things it is that you do. And this is why I've said, to your point, I think the day of the mega corporation in the future, definitely in entertainment, might be over. I mean, we see what's happening to Hollywood. We see what's happening to all these massive brands and how they're hurting. But it's not like we're seeing a lack in enthusiasm. It's just transfer, right? So you have something like what we are doing right now with comics, which has generated a lot of enthusiasm, which the comic book industry hasn't been able to do by itself in a very long time. So that speaks to that. And yeah, I didn't pay for a dime in marketing, man. It's just something that it just happened. Yeah, and it's just, hey, I put this out, you like it, talk about it, word of mouth, as grassroots and organic as realistically possible. So I think that's a reason to be excited for the future. And I do believe in the future because of it, you're going to see a lot of maybe smaller entities that are wildly successful, right? But they might not be, you know, worth $1 trillion. It just may be worth more, maybe some millions. And I'm okay with that. I think that uncertainty strikes fear in a lot of people that are so used to the status quo, right? There were always proper channels to do things. There was always a way to do things. To get in this industry, you had to do it this way. And now the rules are like, have been changed overnight. And people are like making their own rules, really, and doing it their own way. And so that means a lot of uncertainty as people get used to how that's being done for the folks that were doing it the old way or had been taught that the old way was the only way to get to this position. So it's going to be intriguing going into the future, but I'm excited. I think other people should be excited. And we're a testament that if you can just be honest, man, with your audience, they will rock with you. And I've said this before. Look, I'd much rather have a pool of 100 people that really rock with me than have 300 people that are fair weather, that are going to come, that are going to go, they're going to move to the next trendy topic or trendy person, or I only have to do this in order for me to be supported. I don't want to ever be in that position. I want to be able to do whatever it is that I want, and I have to be able to rapport with my audience to do that. And those of us that are reaping the benefits and seeing success as entrepreneurs and seeing success in multiple different like channels. So, you know, that to me is, it just goes to show, man, it won't happen overnight by any means, but it goes to show that it's very doable. And right now we're living in an age where it's far more doable than ever. Like if a Stan Lee came in today, he He doesn't even have to work for Marvel. He can do it himself. Like that was unheard of back when he was coming up. So I think there's going to be a lot more of this, and people should be, to me, excited for it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I think there's a huge amount of opportunity. Like, I totally understand why people are angry and concerned and worried about all the goofiness that's happening in all across the board, right? Every single industry, all the woke stuff, all the stuff that they're trying to put on children. It doesn't matter. It can be cartoons. It can be comic books. It can be movies. It can be large franchises. It can be retail stores. It can be food products. It can literally be everything. But as annoying as that all is, I'm like, yo, that's opportunity. That's all opportunity. And I think that people need to reframe their brain a little. I feel the same with, you know, when you've got these, I just saw just before jumping on this, one of my friends just got a strike on YouTube for making a video speaking about some of the evil stuff going on in the world and the fact that it's being censored. And then they banned the video and flagged him for this. This is like one of the most positive people that's out there. And I'm just like, man, this is crazy. I saw Jordan Peterson in the Daily Wire, right? They're getting flagged. Mm-hmm. They're getting demonetized, all this. And I'm like, that is concerning, but in the long term, all they're doing is just opening huge gaps for competitors. Absolutely. Right? Nobody was talking about Rumble before.
Yep,
nobody was talking about Twitter as a video platform before, right? No one was uploading 2 hour long movies and documentaries and podcasts to Twitter. Like, that's just starting now. And, you know, I spoke to Elon personally about this last week, and he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, you know, if you get banned on that thing, like, come on Twitter and, you know, we're not going to censor you. As long as your content is legal, as long as you're not like putting out some, you know, genuinely crazy stuff, then, you right. know, post it on there. So, you know, it's going to take a while, but I think people forget, hey, YouTube only has existed. YouTube's not even 20 years old. None of these things are even 20 years old. So
kind of crazy to imagine, huh?
It is, right? So 20 years from now, the landscape is not going to be the same, right? It's guaranteed. I think it's pretty much guaranteed that in 20 years, some of the biggest platforms and franchises and companies in the world and celebrities in the world are going to be completely irrelevant. And there's going to be, there will be some that continue on. There will be ones that are, you know, babies now that are mm-hmm. going to be gigantic. Yep. There's people now who have like, you know, a couple hundred followers who are going to have millions. There's things getting 10,000 views now that are going to be getting 100 million views later. So the opportunity is there. I'm like, yo, guys, this is kind of a land grab, right? Like, yeah, sure, it would have been better to start 10 or 15 years ago. But if you have an ounce of creativity in you, if you have an ounce of entrepreneurship in you, I mean, look what happened with, the Daily Wire is probably the best at doing this, just responding quickly, right? Some goofy stuff happens with Hershey's. What do they do? Bang, they sell 100,000 chocolate bars in a day, right? They didn't even have the chocolate supplier. They just started selling chocolate they didn't even have, right? You know, they did it with the razors, right? Yeah. And I'm just like, yo, Daily Wire doesn't need to be the only people doing this, right? You could be a solo person. You could be a small group. You don't just, I don't know, man. And coming to it, I mean, the reason I'm saying all this is because, you know, like what you're doing in the world of comics is unprecedented and incredible, right? You're actually paving a new way, and you're showing people it can be done. I was telling you before we even started recording, I'm working on a new book right now. I've done a couple Kickstarter campaigns in the past for my music, and I've got offers on the table. I've got, hey, Zuby, we want to work with you, you know, this publishing company, this literary agent, whatever. And I'm like, okay, like that's an option. But I'm like, man, what about if I just do this like fully independently? Like I got all these followers online, like people like what I'm doing. I've just seen what my friend Eric has done with his comic, right? Like why, I don't know. It's just opening opportunities in a way. Yeah. That did not exist before. You wanted to write a book. You wanted to put out an album. You got to go through the proper channels. You got to sign that deal. You got to sign your life away. You got to get your 10% royalty, you know, if you even recoup whatever. So I just want people to know, man, like if you're listening to this and you're even slightly entrepreneurial, you're creative, you got an idea, man, I think the next couple decades are going to be wild. And there's going to be some greatness that comes out of it.
Yeah, it's going to be very telling. I mean, it's, you know, if you have a great idea, I mean, it's also the connectivity is very cool, because even connecting with other people that I would have never thought that I would have been able to connect with is just so possible. Like you could have asked me yesterday, like, or more so, let's say you look at me at 18 and you a little athlete loves comics, all that stuff, whatever. And you're like, yeah, man, one, there's going to be a point in time that the guy's book you read, Chuck Dixon, you're going to be working with him. Yeah. Okay. And now here we are, right? We got Chuck Dixon on AlphaCore, one of the most prolific writers of our generation, is now doing AlphaCore One for us, and the Saska sisters are doing Yaira and all this stuff like that. I'm like, what is going on? Even me now, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is like, this wasn't supposed to be this way, but I'm in the position now to do it. And it's awesome because, you know, I think the part that even, you know, you look at our detractors, like that they don't seem to understand. Well, it goes to show that they are dishonest and they don't really care about the industry in itself. But it's funny because Chuck posted a tweet the other day about this, and someone asked him about getting paid and all this. He was like, yeah, man, Eric, as soon as I turned into work, I got paid. And, you know, there's this thing going on with comics and people not having to wait, I mean, months before they actually get paid for a completed commission, right? So that's the part that of the things that I think people don't see. They just see the money and they don't see, like, we get to correct a lot of things that ail this industry, that plague this industry. So whether it be with my contractors, my employees, I get to pay people very well to work in comics. That's what the bottom line is. I pay people well to work in comics. And I saw things that were problems because we're our own distributor as well. We're on distributor. So I saw things that were an issue. And I said, you know what? This doesn't make sense. Why is Marvel a multi-billion dollar company? Why don't they distribute their own comics? That doesn't even make sense. Then why are they going through someone else to do it? And I just didn't understand it. I didn't like it. I was like, well, I can build something more personable. I can create a unique experience, checkout experience with my users, as well as identifying individual problems and correcting them, pivoting on them, because I don't have a middleman to worry about. So I said, well, you know, we're basically two companies in one. We're a creative company in the sense of the properties there, but we're also a distribution company. So all of those issues that come with both sides, we're able to correct. We're able to correct all the issues that come on both sides of that, we're able to get resolved. And I'm blessed. And I'm thankful to be in a position. But it's just something that a lot of these guys just will never understand because they don't see that part of it. And that just goes to show, I don't think those guys actually care about it. But to the point about the entrepreneurial aspect of it, that's the fun thing about it. It's all problem solving, right? It's like, okay, this thing I like to do, this industry I'm part of, this industry I want to be in. But as I'm getting in it, I'm seeing there's things that I don't like or I can't make sense of. I don't know how you are. That's how I am with everything I do. I'm a little hard-headed. I'm a little stubborn. So I see some people, everybody doing things, and I ask, you know, I'm like, why is everybody going through Diamond to distribute there? And nobody really knows why. It's just like, this is what the industry standard is. I'm like, okay, well, let's just not do that because you can't even explain to me why everybody's doing it. And it doesn't really have any benefit. It's just going through the motions. So I'm not going to do it. So he didn't. And that's how I treat business in general. It's like, okay, what is the industry standard? What is everybody doing? Can I make that make sense? Yes or no? If I can't make it make sense, I just won't do it. And that's the cool problem solving element about everything it is that we do. That it's just a blast. It's just really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for, you know, for the criticisms and for the detractors. A lot of it is certainly driven by jealousy and envy. Another thing I've noticed about human beings, though, which might sound kind of funny to people, given people know where I stand on, you know, social, cultural, political stuff. But I think that almost everybody is conservative in a sense. When I say that, I don't mean in the hard political way. What I mean is in the sort of proper, just surface level definition of people don't really like change. Right. Just like, you know, most people are not comfortable moving to a new city or moving to a new country or trying a food they've never tasted before. Like, people are pretty actually conservative in the way that they think. And when you do something that goes against the grain, if there's a way a legacy system or company or operation works and it's got massive inefficiencies or problems or whatever, and you're the person who comes in and just says, wait, why? Like you said, why is it being done this way? Like, what is the purpose of this? Why is it not done this way? And people are like, oh, well, it's just the way we do things, right? It's almost like tradition, right? And traditions have a purpose. But I think when it comes to these giant companies, some of these things have existed. Some of these entities have existed for decades, if not centuries, in some cases.
Yeah.
And they started in a time where things were very different. I mean, see an obvious example. If you look at record labels, right? Record labels, I don't know when the first one started, probably, you know, at least a century ago. But they started out with, you know, shipping vinyl records, right? And, you know, recording a certain way and doing things a certain way. And then as time has gone on and things moved into digital downloading and then streaming and whatever, with so many of these record labels, I mean, you've got situations where artists are getting signed and the albums are not even coming out on CD or vinyl, and they're still, you know, deducting a percentage for breakages. For those listening, breakages is when, you know, you used to ship out records, you used to ship out CDs around the nation or around the world, and you estimate a certain percentage of them are going to break. And so you have to like deduct that. So they're still applying breakages to digital only deals, right? Because they're so stuck in just like, this is how it works. This is what the percentages are. Why should a record deal or a publishing deal be a 8 to 12% royalty?
Right.
Why? Right. I mean, you could argue that never made sense. But I mean, in the here and now, I'm like, why should you get 10%? You wrote a book, you made an album, you created, like, why should the person who made it get a 10% cut? And it's just like, oh, that's just how it is. Like, that's how it's always been. I'm like, well, so like does that make sense? Like, does that sound fair? Like, who made the thing? How much effort what are you doing to earn 90% of what is happening? But it's like people don't challenge these things. And when someone comes along and does it, I find that, you know, people don't really like it. If you see what's happening with, you know, random example, Tucker Carlson now doing his show on Twitter, right? You've seen the backlash about that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you mad that a political pundit is using Twitter instead of the TV to reach people? Like, why is that a problem? Like,
right.
Why shouldn't he be doing that? You know what I mean? But people don't like it. I'm sure there's people in the proper, you know, in the old school legacy news media who are very, very angry at this because he's not doing it the proper way. He's literally not going through the right channels. And it's like, well, why should he? He's got his audience. Millions of people want to hear what he's got to say. So just do it. So yeah, I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. It's just so many people it is the proper channels. It's the certainty that comes with, or the familiarity that comes with the status quo that so many people are attracted to. And it's like, even if it doesn't make sense, they feel some level of comfort because the level of uncertainty isn't there as much as someone getting out there, giving it a shot and trying to do something that is against the grain or a little different from before. And that's the difficult thing about all of this. You know, it's like people are going to say or feel some kind of way just because you went against, you did it in an alternative way. So technically it's not even against anything. It's just like, you're not doing it their way. So that in itself, they find a threat. And I think for some people, it is more saving their own bacon. It's job protection. It's like, well, if people get wind of this, especially other upcoming creatives, well, we're not going to be as legitimate as before. I think that's what happened with legacy media. And we saw that especially during 2020 with the rise of COVID and all that, where they were so angry and taking it out on people posting things on like YouTube and social media because it didn't come from them. So they felt like, well, that's not how it should be. All of the factual information, and I'm using that loosely, using that in quotes, is the information that comes from them. It's not whether it's not as right or wrong. It's more of, it came from us, so you can trust us. And now there's these competitors that are doing all of this stuff and they're getting seen. And in a lot of cases, higher numbers than what they're getting that are watching their show. You know, there's all this alternative media and all that. And that aggravates them because two things, I think is the lack of control there. But I think it's also the uncertainty. The uncertainty is like, well, what happens if this catches on? What if this is the new way that people are more attracted to? Well, we're not going to be seen as legitimate anymore. Yeah, you're not, you know. And instead of adjusting, a lot of guys, legacy guys, look at it like, well, we should keep doing what it is that we're doing, and we're going to keep doing what it is that we're doing because, well, why not? We're the right guys. And it's like, yeah, man, you could adjust. Instead of getting mad at me for creating my own comic book company and using my own platform to do the pre-orders, you could adjust and maybe learn from it, because that's how I am. Envy is not something that I've ever, like, it's not baked into my DNA, because I'm a constant learner, right? Hard-headed in the sense that I won't do something that doesn't make sense, but I'm a constant learner. So when I see someone that does something that does make sense, I'll ask questions. Hey, how you do that? Remember, even when I was building my site, I don't know if you remember, I reached out to you. I was like, let me, because I saw what you were doing. I was like, man, his site looks clean. It looks slick. Like, what? Let me get some tips, because that's the way I see things. I don't look at it like, well, this person is more popular than me, or this person, who cares? I'm like, that's useful information. You made it work for you. And maybe it's not to say that it's a direct transfer, but maybe there's things that I could take from what it is that a successful person did and make it unique to my experience and make it unique to the experience that I want to give my customers. That's the way that I look at it. But a lot of legacy cats don't. They look at it like anybody providing anything different is a threat. And that's why they get so aggressive when a Tucker Carlson or something just says, yeah, I just posted on Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, why now? Who says I have to be on legacy media anymore? Like, I'm getting the same viewership. People that like me are going to come see me. Why didn't I just post it myself here with lesser restraints? That aggravates them. And that's what a lot of people need to be prepared for. If you do things the alternative way and you see success, there's going to be a lot of ankle biters that come out of nowhere that are just angry. And you're going to be like, what, why? I think a lot of fans of the Ripperverse came about because of that. It wasn't like a lot of these guys didn't know who I was. They were like, these guys are all talking about it. You think I'm slapping people's mamas. I'm slapping people's babies. I'm cussing. I'm doing all kinds of just foul stuff. You would think the way they talk about me, but what happens is it's discovery, it's engagement. So they're like, who are they? I got to look into this guy, because this is insane. And then they find out I'm just a guy. This is the least mild thing that I've probably ever done, creating a comic book company.
Most mild.
Sure. Like, it's between, like, all my political takes and everything. The thing that got me into most trouble is me starting a comic book company. That was what did it for them. And it goes to show that because they can't control it, because we're doing the whole thing, that aggravates the living crap out of them. And, you know, I get it, because think of it from their perspective. They've controlled this market for so long, or different entertainment industries for so long. And then you have a guy that just came out of nowhere and said, yeah, I'm here. And there's nothing you can do to him to stop him. You can't say, all right, well, I just make sure his distributor doesn't work to him. I'll try to do this cancellation stuff. Well, we're all on distributor. You can't do that. You know what I mean? So all your efforts are going to be futile. And that's what happened with ISOM too, right? It's like, oh, it's just a one hit wonder. All this happened. And here we are closing in on $1 million. Nope. We do this right now. Just sorry, man. It didn't work. It didn't work.
Do you know the funniest part of all of it to me is these are the same people who are, we need more Black creators.
Yep.
We need more diversity.
Yep. Yep. They go out the window real quick, huh? Real fast. All of a sudden, we need more Black creators. We need more Black characters, they said as well. They said, and here we are. Black guy creates a Black character that so many people embrace, and he's the most hated person in comic books, man. Like, what in the world is going on? So, yeah, and all that stuff. And like I said this the other, like, doing ISOM 1. I was like, man, I'd have been called racist names that I even know exist by these people. You know what I mean? Just because I started a comic book. I'm like, well, I got to Google some of this stuff. I'm like, what is this? Like, these people are ugly and nasty. They threw all that kumbaya, pro-black, all that stuff, fist in her. That stuff went out of the window, bro. Like, Ripperverse came about, and, man, these guys put on the Klansman hats, bro, and went after me. I'm like, oh, wow. This is what did it. It wasn't the political takes. That didn't do it. The political takes wasn't what did it. It was a comic book company. Like, wow. It's incredible, man. It's incredible.
I just find the whole thing so funny, the complete lack of self-awareness for that all of these people have. Like, it's incredible. And the thing that even makes it, on top of that, makes it funnier is you are someone who does have strong and specific political views and values.
Yep.
but it's not even in the comic.
Yeah, no, it's not. Like, that has nothing. In fact, that's a rule. That's a rule. It's a part of our ethics. I'm not going to beat you in over the head. I'm just here to respect the customers. I'm just here to create a comic book. My political stuff got left at the door, man. There were people that were begging me to do that. I said, no, same thing. Everybody else, leave that stuff at the door. Let's just make good content. So the least political thing that I've ever done is this right here, right? It's not like backwards. It's not like any of that stuff. It is the least political thing that I've done. And they hate me more than what they did when I was making actual political content, which is incredible. But again, I think that just shows that we're on to something, right? It's like, why are they so aggravated? It's like, this is what they were afraid of the whole time. They were afraid of people doing something that's parallel to them that they can't control and has kind of a mind of its own. So the best that they could do is galvanize our troops, but they can't stop us. They can't stop this movement or anything, like all the defamation and the slanderous statements that these guys have attempted to make. It's been ineffective. So with us being able to keep grinding and continue to create and to continue to be great, they can't stop us. And that's what they were afraid of. So I think, you know, I rag on, for example, a lot of like the American conservatives, because when it comes to entertainment, a lot of them have neglected it as a means of cultural change, because they felt that, oh, it's not important.
We'll get them at the ballot box.
Right. Yeah. That's the only thing that matters, right, to them. Even Breitbart at least understood this. Andrew Breitbart knew that, hey, politics are on the downstream of culture, not the opposite way. So this is more impactful than people give it credit for. But this is, it shows that this is what they were truly scared of. You know, that's how we can rag on or be mad at the authoritarian left in the West in particular. But they rose to power not by simple politics. It was more of, they got control of the youth and the youngsters through other ways that was outside of that. And so they're just breeding. So they got control of the institutions. They got control of the entertainment. And, you know, what else? You might not like Beyonce, but your kids do, or something of that nature. Or, you know, you might not like this. You might think this animation is stupid. This music genre is dumb. But there's a whole generation of people that are being raised on that are getting bad information, unfortunately, for people that are out of their wit. And in order to combat that, you don't neglect it. You participate and be better at it. And that's the way that I see it. So, you know, this is my way to do that, much like my music was is still my way of doing that. So I think this is why the tide does often feel like it's changing, is because finally people are getting that. And a lot of people that aren't leftists are getting that. You mentioned building platforms, Rumbles of the world, the Odysseys of the world. These are becoming actual competitors in the video space. Sure, they might not have a user base of YouTube, but YouTube, like to your point, 20 years ago didn't have the base that it has now. So, you know, we're at the beginning stages. And to me, that's fun. That uncertainty scares a lot of people. For me, I'm enthusiastic. I've said, even if on the other side of this, if things change, the economics start to change, and I didn't have a spot, I'd still welcome it. I still welcome it. You know what I mean? I think, of course, we're going to be here. But even if I didn't, because it's a necessary change, right? And just from an economic perspective, I think the decentralization of all of this can only benefit us. And I'm glad to be a part of it. But even if I weren't, it'd still be something that I would push for.
Our podcast today is sponsored by The Wellness Company. Did you know that nearly 90% of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. are produced overseas? That's an alarming statistic. If you don't have an emergency kit on hand, it's time to get prepared. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit contains 8 potentially life-saving medications that every single American should keep in stock. It comes with a 22-page instruction guide on safe medical use for everything from snake bites to COVID to bioterror events. Another stellar product from The Wellness Company is Spike Support. Whether you got vaxxed or not, the virus is still among us in some capacity, as well as the related spike protein. Spike protein can cause brain fog, tissue damage, blood clots, and more. Spike Support is a detoxification powerhouse that aims to strengthen the body's natural immunity and flush out spike protein, so you can get back to that pre-COVID feeling. Get both of these products by going to twc.health/Zuby and get 15% off with the discount code Zuby. That's twc.health/Zuby and use discount code Zuby to get 15% off. Disclosure, the medical emergency kit is only available to U.S. residents.
That's dope, man. That man, so many important points made there. On the concept of politics being downstream of culture, if you want to know how that is so incredibly obvious as well, is if I look at my own country, the UK. The UK has had the conservatives, I don't know if you know this, the conservatives have been in the government in the UK for the past 13 years. Has anyone seen the direction that the UK has gone in the past 13 years, which is the exact same direction the US has gone? That's all been under the conservatives, right? So it's not, and you know, someone can say, oh, well, they're not conservative enough or whatever, but it's just like, yo, like the society and the culture is doing what the society and the culture is doing, right? Yep. It doesn't really matter who you vote for. I mean, did the US become more conservative in the Trump presidency? Like, really? No, you could say that the backslide was not as rapid, and some of the stuff was, you know, paused or, you know, slowed down, but it's still like that's the way the culture is going. So yeah, that's the way the whole thing is going. You know, there's a lot you talked about there in terms of the detractors and the criticism and the outright hatred and so on. And I honestly think that all of it, I've spent a lot of time, especially over the past like 15 years, trying to understand why people behave in certain ways. And I think at the core of it is, funnily enough, given that it's June right now, I think at the core of it is pride. I think that's like the emotion or sin that is sort of at the top of this. And I would argue that pride/arrogance actually is responsible for lack of success in people's lives. Mm. More than lack of effort or laziness. I think people are just prideful. You brought this up, right? You are not too prideful to learn from other people. You see someone doing something cool or achieving something, doing something that you find inspirational, you want to do, and you want to learn. There's two different types of people. There's the, you know, someone pulls up in a Lamborghini or in a supercar. You get two types of responses, typically. You get, well, I guess three, right? One you could just ignore, but typically you get the type of person who's like, okay, either this guy has a small penis. I don't know how your car is connected to your penis size, by the way, but yeah, oh, you know, this guy's overcompensating. Oh, he's got a big truck. Oh, you know, he's overcompensating for something, or he's probably a drug dealer, or he's a trust fund kid, or he did something illegal. He's a scammer. He's what, right? Just based off of the person having a nice, expensive car. The other mindset is someone like me sees that. I'm like, interesting. I wonder how that guy afforded that car. I wonder what he does. I wonder what that guy does. Like, yep. You know, I'm like, I want to talk to that person. Hey, yo, this guy's got like, cool. What does he do? Is he a stockbroker? Is he a actor? Is he a real estate guy? Like, I don't know, but I'm like, cool. I actually want to talk to that person and I want to find out how they did it. Like, that's just an example, like a very visual one, but you get those two types of mentalities. You've got someone who is doing something cool, inspirational, aspirational, difficult. It could be having a great, same thing. Someone posts up you can have a lifelong drug-free athlete. They post up a photo of their physique. Ah, steroids.
Steroids.
Oh,
yeah.
he's just got lucky genetics. Oh, he just did. And I'm like, dude. And then you have other people who are like, hey man, like what's your routine? What's your diet like? How did you do that? Man, you look great. Like, how did you do X? Like, you've got the people who want to learn because they don't have that pride. And then you have the people who are too prideful, and that can come out as all forms of negativity, right? It can just be, you know, downplaying the person's success, accusing them of things, just hating on them, insulting them, trying to find some way that they can frame it but I think it all comes from pride. All these people who are hating on you, whether they're in the comic book industry or they're just these random like nobodies on social media or whatever, I think it all stems from pride, right? You have too much pride to just be able to go, okay, man, like, good job. Like, you know, good job. Like you're doing something cool. At a minimum, like, I'm not going to hate on you and I'll just like, you know, give you a little clap. Yeah. And at most I might be like, hey, actually, like, hey, how did you do that? Right? I see that. I'm like, yo, how I've never seen someone do this before.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone launch a comic book company like independently and sell millions of dollars worth of copies in weeks, in days. Like I've never seen anyone ever anywhere do that. You're gonna hate on that, right? Like that's crazy to me, especially if you're in the comic book industry. I'm like, yo, yeah. Like that's even crazier. I'm like, yo, this is a new model. This is a way you guys could, especially with all your resources and all your whatever, like you could learn something from this and stop burning through your money and burning through your staff and do things better. But they are so prideful that they won't do it. I think it all comes down to pride.
Yeah, the arrogance of it all and no humility as well. It's to just be able to admit and adjust that, you know, you might look at something and you see someone doing some certain way and you have to definitely as an entrepreneur be able to not only just learn, but have enough humility to admit that maybe your way of doing things were either inefficient or weren't as efficient as it possibly could be. Only then can you actually correct a mistake or correct something and make something better in the first place. And that's what's lacking, especially in the comic book industry. There's no humility because they are arrogant. Because they are very prideful and of what it is they do. And rather, they're doing this to show folks up as opposed to doing it for the reasons like I do, where I like, I actually care. You think I would have invested $300,000 of my own money to start this company if I just didn't care about it? Like, no, this is something that I had a lot of passion in. And, you know, anybody that actually gave a crap about this or wanted to create their own thing should be able to look at that. And a lot of people have, but look at that as a means of aspiration and look at that as, okay, how do I pick up some game here? Because there's clearly something that he's tapped into and I want to be there, or I take half of that, an eighth of that, whatever it might be. There's something that you can take from it. And I, as a seeing other businessmen and not just my industry, but other industries, that's how I look at it. I'm like, okay, they did that. That makes sense, especially with logistics stuff, because the easier part is the creation. Then you got to get it to the hands of the customers. That's a whole nother animal. But, you know, I've learned so much from that and how other businesses do it how the technology is able to make this a more efficient process. And you have to have that about you if you're going to be a successful businessman, especially in the day where everything's decentralized or the means are more affordable than what they were in the past. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, we're recording this right now. This can be streamed as well. Like, that was impossible, you know, years ago. That was not a thing. People didn't do this. So just on that aspect alone, technology has accelerated and made something like this. I've seen short films get made with like a simple DSLR. You don't need a $30,000 red camera to do stuff anymore. Like, you don't need that all the staff. You don't need that anymore.
People have shot whole movies and documentaries on iPhones.
It's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane, right? That was unheard of, man. But that's showing that even just on technology alone, it has allowed people to do things and enter. I guess the barrier of entry isn't as high as it is, or the gatekeepers on is where they might still be on their little pocket of the industry. They're still, of course, there, but you also don't have to go through that gate. You can either make your own and just go through that and just walk on through. And like I said, humility is just something that so many people, they lack. So once we get there and, you know, we're seeing that level of success, I've also tried to get to a point, and I picked this up as well on game with some of the things that you did and like the fitness world, where you're like, okay, I picked up this game. I'm going to put it to you here in the book, or I'm going to give you this free game, or I'm going to give you this game to pick up, make your life better. That's kind of some stuff that I would love to do with the comic book industry. Or publishing industry, because there's a lot of stuff that I learned along the way, a lot of stuff that was trial and error as well. And we saw some success on a lot of these things and be able to get that game away and see other people sprout and make better versions of themselves. It is what this stuff is about. But like I said, that correction has to come from within, and you have to have humility to admit, maybe I'm doing this the wrong way. Maybe I can be more efficient. And that's what to me separates like, okay, decently successful people from wildly successful people, because they have at least enough humility to be able to pivot and not be so stuck up their own stuff to where they're like, I'm not deviating from anything it is that I do. And if you do it differently and you see success, then you're doing it the wrong way. Like, that's just not the way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You cannot learn You cannot learn if you're too prideful, right? Like, if you already know everything, how can you learn? Like, if you think you're number one, why would you try harder? And so many people are stuck in that mindset. And I think oftentimes they don't realize it. I'm curious to know, man, when did you first start thinking about ISOM? Obviously, you launched it last year, but when did you first start thinking about, okay, maybe even in the greater sense, the Ripperverse itself?
Yeah.
When did you first know? I know you've been critical of what's going on in the comic industry for many years, but when did you sort of decide in your mind, you know what, I want to start a comic book company?
It had to be 20, like I made the decision. I remember doing a video that maybe people can dig up where I just entertained the idea. And then it got to a point to where I was like, I'm going to really, really look into this. And so that was 2020 going into 2021. Right. And I was like, all right, I'm committing. There's probably not going to be a better time than now. My competitors suck. You know what I mean? And I'm in a position, I have the finances to make something like this happen. So I started with the creative stuff, and that was all like foundational. I have a series or universe Bible, more accurately putting it. And I built it. I kept building on that universe Bible, ISOM was the first.
When you say a universe Bible, I think I know what you mean, but explain that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I did was I don't start with the story. I don't do that. That's not my writing style. What I did was say, okay, I have aspirations to make an entire universe that's going to be ever expanding. So let's start from building a Bible with entries for almost like an encyclopedia for everybody that even if there's, for example, we got Chuck and we got the Saskas, they got the entries that I have on my universe Bible to learn more about the character. So what I did was break down all the characters that I created initially, ISOM being the first one. And I broke down his family. I broke down all these different things. And they're all live on my universe Bible. Some of this stuff isn't even public because we didn't reveal it. A lot of it actually is. But I was building the characters out. I was building the actual worlds out, the physical locations, right? We got Flores Park, Texas, fictional city. So I built that out. And all the attributes, I built it out. And then I started writing. So I had a starting point that was there. And then I started writing. So I built the Bible. I got the writing. And then I got to, you know, hey, I want to work with some people. And I knew that I needed to surround myself with like veterans, right? So that's how Gabe El-Tayeb, these former DC Marvel colorists, Cliff Richards, same thing, done a lot of work with DC, got him a part of the project, and we made magic, right? And, you know, I was building my team as we grew, right? As this became more of a reality, and I realized, look, man, there's deficiencies that I have. Concept artist. I need a concept artist. I need someone to help me do like more from the being able to present it professionally to an artist. I need someone to help me with that stuff. Editor, you know, my team that's here right now in the world, like this was growing and I was bringing people on, and this was before we actually launched it. So it became an idea. It was conceptualized going into 2020, 2021. It got real. And I spent about a year world building alone. And writing a story. And then I finally announced it. So there's a lot of logistical stuff as well that I had to deal with that other companies don't because, well, they don't distribute their own stuff, warehousing and all that sort of stuff. It was a lot of work that I did. And it's actually, yeah, we had issues, still having issues to this day that come with the problems of being successful, if you want to call it that. It happens. And I'm always constantly learning. And like I said, in order to get in this position, it was humility to be able to say, understand where I needed help, or I understand that I can't do everything. I'm one man and I'm well-versed in certain things, but I can't do everything. So bringing people on that knew something more than I did about said subject matter, did all that. And that's why it saw success. It's a combination. It was us being organized and a well-oiled machine before you even knew about it. But also it was the timing. You know, look, even if you don't know about comic books, everybody seems to know that they've gone to crap because they picked up on storylines and all this. Like they're doing this on Superman's son's gay out of nowhere. Like they've done all this weird just nonsense, right? And people know about it that don't even read comics, which was telling me like, bro, what if I don't even have to like,
dude, that's be literally the antithesis. Me.
Yeah,
that's literally me because I actually used to read comic books as a as a kid and as a teen. And then, I mean, your comic was the first one, not only that I bought, but first, okay, no, I lie, but I've got another friend. My friend Shadow also released a manga book. So his and yours were like the first two in years. I genuinely, of course, you know, being friends with you guys is obviously a factor, but I was like, I'd like to think even if I didn't personally know you, like, this is one of the first things that's kind of like genuinely exciting. And, you know, there's something again that they do with it, not just in comics, but you're seeing it happening so much in movies and with Disney and all these shows and whatever, is that it's like, it's not just that they don't listen to the customers. It's that they spite them.
Oh yeah.
Right?
It's
like, it's so spiteful. It's like you take a character who, you know, people connect with and love and maybe even grew up with, and they look a certain way and they've got certain things about them. And then you just instead of creating a new character, you just fundamentally change. You just make a random character gay. You make a random character used to be white skin, fair skinned with red hair. You just make them black, right?
One happens more than anything. Man, I don't know what they got against the white people, bro.
It's wild, isn't it?
Automatic. I'm
just like, imagine you just take Black Panther, or you take Blade, and you just make it like a white blue-eyed blonde hair. You'd just be like, nah, man, like, come on. They're trying to do it with James Bond now. Like, bro, like, I don't want James Bond to be black. I think it would be cool to have like a black spy movie or action hero, and you can just make like a whole new world. Don't start with, you know, the 20th one in the series, right? Start with number one. Create a whole new character, right? But they're just like, no. Like, we've had this thing going for like 50 years, but now we're going to, or they want to make Bond. I've heard them wanting to make Bond a woman.
Woman, yeah. Like, James
Bond is not a woman, bro.
No, that's true.
No one wants this. Women don't want
that. Nobody asked for that.
Women do not want that. Women don't want female James Bond. Men don't want female James Bond. And it's just like, they just want to do it to just like annoy people. They're doing it in video games. They're like, oh, let's just make this character ugly for no reason. Let's just like make this. So I don't know. I think they're digging their own graves, man.
Oh, that's exactly what's happening. But spite is for sure what they're doing. Make no mistake. That's the perfect way to put what it is these idiots are doing. It's that they don't like you. Like, I don't know if you've heard about what they've done with the Punisher. Right? They are demoralizing the Punisher. Oh, my God. So right now, where do I start? All right, I'm going to give you the short version of basically what recently happened. And I'm not joking. This is the ending of basically of this recent series by Jason Aaron, who is notorious for the nerds out there. You know I'm right on this. Notorious for just destroying characters is what Jason Aaron does. So this is what happened. I'm going to tell you what happened at the end of the series. You know why? Obviously Punisher, considering his family got murdered and all, this is why he does what it is that he does. So they resurrected the wife of him. She basically comes back, tells him he's a piece of crap, divorces him, right? And takes half of his money. Not even joking. Like, that was the ending of the run. And they also had all these different characters within like the Marvel Universe just oddly telling him how much he's just a piece of crap, right? And of course, why they did that is it's not simply because, well, I'll tell you this. They know that Punisher, especially with his symbol, is adopted by people that they feel are their ideological enemies. So they can't have a Punisher like that exist. They can't have him. So they're doing what they can to try to, that's straight spite, because there's no reason to do that. That is strictly of spite for people's ideological, for the people that they feel are their ideological enemies. And they've been doing stuff like that at an accelerated rate. I don't know if you knew about this, but back in the gap, MODOK, the character, ironically, appears in, I think, this new Ant-Man movie, the recent Ant-Man movie, the big, people associated with the big face. They made him look like Trump in like a book. Like, I'm not even joking. Back in like 2010, it's not even joking. They made him look like Trump. And I'm like, there was another thing DC did. They made Joker, the character Joker, basically be Trump. He was playing Trump. like in one of the Black Label books. Like they do stuff like, and it's not equal. That's why it's so.
They did the one with Jordan Peterson as Red Skull.
Yes, like... that was another one. The Ta-Nehisi Coates, who has no business writing comic books. He's a social commentator. Some commentator that has never shown that he liked comics. They bring him in. He writes Captain America and Black Panther. Like, what are y'all doing? And to your point, yeah, Hell Lobster, I guess, because they made Red Skull basically repeating verbatim points of Jordan Peterson. And I'm like, what in the world are y'all doing, man? So you make this villain be depicted or by, I guess, or depicted as the villain that you think you have in real life. And the a lack of balance. And like I said, it'd be one thing. The reason why people say that it's overtly political is because, namely, that there's no balance. Once used to be balanced. When they entered into it, it was like, all right, well, this guy's a conservative. This guy's this and that. And they would depict them in a more objective light. Whereas to now, the only thing being presented in a positive light are modern authoritarian leftism, Democrats and all that. So, when Obama came on, he's on the cover of Amazing Spider-Man. Trump comes along after him, he's MODOK, right? It's no balance, like, right? It's no balance there. It's no balance. And that's why people are so aggravated in it. And these guys, as the comic book industry crashes and burns, these guys keep doubling down because they haven't learned anything, because they're not operating on, like, caring about what it is they're doing. They're not caring about the craft. All they care about, or whatever, let's say this, what's at the top of what they care about is taking it to you as their ideological enemy. And to me, from a creative standpoint, you can't do your best work if that's going to be your approach. You can't possibly do that.
No, you really can't. It massively gets in the way of creativity, and it clouds everything. It's also foolish from a business perspective, right? You know, it's that old Michael Jordan statement, you know what, Republicans buy shoes too, right? And it's like, how you've got at least half of the country, and I would say the majority of the world, leans more conservative, certainly, than they do leftist.
Yeah, right? Sure.
Like there's more conservatives in the world than there are leftists. So even from a sort of business perspective, it's just like, why are you so aggressively trying to, I mean, I know you've got like ESG and, you know, corporate equity index and all these things, which is actually the source of a lot of the goofiness, but it's just like, I don't know. It's on multiple levels. It's really silly. It's bad. It's bad from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. It's bad from a moral perspective. It's bad from a just caring about your customers. It's bad from a creative perspective. It's like, look, these are creative things. Right? Like the purpose of music or art or movies, or ultimately it's to entertain. Entertain is number one. That's the first thing, right? If you watch a movie and it's not entertaining, then it's not a good movie. Right? Yeah. Like if the comic book is not entertaining, it's not a good comic. Like that's the first thing, right? You can have message, you can have education, you can have even politics, you can have all that stuff under it, but the first thing is that it's got to be entertaining. But with them, they're doing it backwards. They're like, all right, let's just lead.
Yep.
We're just going to lead with the politics. We're going to lead with, you know, if you look, even if you want to make a character, you want to make a character gay, you want to make a character a they, them, whatever. Like, if that's the thing you lead with, right?
It's
going to fail every time.
Nowhere around.
Being gay is not a superpower, right?
Never like, has been. They like to think of it as, but that's not how it works. You lead with it's that, like, stand no, on a rival.
No, and it's the same. It's the same in the real world, right? Like, I don't know. Like the gay people I know who are cool, I often forget that they're gay, right? Like it's not the thing that's constantly shown. No, it's not the whole personality, it's not the whole identity. It's more like, okay, cool. Like this person's like, oh, okay. And then as a side note, it's the same with other things. You know, you got people who just, you know, if the most interesting thing about Isom was like he's black, right? Yeah. There's people who if they created that character, the whole thing, the whole USP, the whole marketing, the whole thing would be black owned business, black character.
Yep.
Right? That would be the whole thing. It's just like a side note. And look at the success. Everyone's buying it. People are supporting it. Because these are the same people, all the people buying it. And then the detractors will be the ones saying, oh, you know, your fan base or your audience is racist or they're this. And you're like, bro, they're literally in droves buying I get the same. I get the same thing when people are like, you know, saying that my audience or my customers are racist. I'm like, so for the past, so you're telling me for the past 16 plus years with everything I've done with my music and everything else, like, and my live events, you know, these people are so racist and anti-black or whatever that like they're supporting me and buying my stuff or whatever because they like the mental gymnastics that are just going on here. I'm like, what do you mean? You think someone who's a genuine white supremacist is gonna go buy ISOM? No.
Well, yeah, but there's only
12 of them. So who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Even if they, that's the thing. It's like they're not impactful. But of all the people, the races, like they're doing racism wrong, man. Like they got it all wrong, and they need to get that checked out. If the thing that they want to support is the black guy doing things, especially with myself, where it's like the first character is black, and yeah, we don't dwell on it, but it's pretty obvious. You have to be colorblind to not see it. Why would white? Yeah, that's what white. All right, being in all seriousness, that's the last thing that they're gonna support, right? But you know, these guys are on autopilot, right? That's how they operate. It's like they can't believe that people that they feel are their enemies have number one genuine support, but because that's all their talking points are filled with, it's like a script. This is why I've always said NPC is the perfect way to describe these people, because they're operating on scripted notes, and that's really it. Like they can't function outside of it. So even when they can't apply it, because they're so used to saying, anybody that is the opposite of them is racist or misogynistic or homophobic, they're gonna say it anyway. So even if it doesn't apply, they can't deviate from it. So even like with both of ourselves, with us being black, like they're like, oh, okay, well, you're still a bunch of racists, some white supremacists. Like, God. Bro, you can't even try to make sense of that. It's just you're on autopilot. That's you need that to be true. You need that to be us. But on a serious note, like I said, of all the people, I think we're gonna be the last ones that these true, actual white supremacists line up to support. I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
Nah. Were you surprised by how much success were you expecting with ISOM 1? Were you surprised by just how much it took off and how quickly?
Yes. I obviously set a goal. I can't remember. It was 100,000. Like, cause I'm looking at it like, this is the first book that I got a lot of groundwork, a lot of foundation to, so if I make a little bit of my money back, I'll be fine. Right. Because I look at it like, you know, a lot of businesses especially are losing initially, at least. And then they start to recoup fees. But I thought about it, this even in the most wildly successful way, didn't think $3.7 million was even possible. So it took off to a degree that I was not anticipating, which speaks to the demand and speaks to the product itself. Now, definitely now that we have so many returning customers, it speaks to the product. But I'd be lying if I was like, yeah, I knew it was going to do that. I didn't. I straight up didn't. I wanted to see success, and I was confident that we would be at least successful. $3.7 million though, no. And you know, that, like, again, putting that in perspective, that happened within the first 30 hours. Like, technically the next day is when it went to see the $1 million. And it's like the same thing happened now. I know we're having a bunch of site issues, and we would have cleared that in 24 hours this time, because it's just, this is a legitimate demand for it, and they like it. So you never know with these things. This is why you got to at least give it a shot. You know what I mean? I never wanted to be the guy that, and granted, I didn't think I was going to be able to even afford to do something like this until I was well into my 40s, but I did it now and it worked out. But, you know, that's how it works sometimes. You give it a shot and the audience responds. If you beat on your craft, you make sure you're giving them something that's quality. That's all that you can do. And you let the market decide if that's something that they want to rock with. And that's what happened with ISOM. There's no way I would have, I did everything to put the company in success. That's my job to do. But never anticipated something like this. Never did.
No doubt, man. Well, dude, congratulations, man. Like, I genuinely love to see it, man. Like, I remember watching, like, I mean, both campaigns. I'm watching the current one as well. But like that first one, I was just like, what is going? I was like, this is crazy. I was like refreshing the page, like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it just kept going up.
I was like, what is this? What is this? Yeah. It was like the first time I discovered Bitcoin in a bull market. And I was just like, what's this thing? Like, what?
trust me. I'm right there with you on that, man.
You're refreshing and the numbers just going up. I'm like,
you're like, oh my God. They're trying to process like what all is happening. Like, it's $1 million. What in the world? Like, that was all that was going, and I was in shock, bro. Like, I was in shock, phone blowing up. Congratulations. And you know, that's a testament also to this. Folks like yourself are talking about it. You know, a lot of creators in our camp are talking about it. And you know, that's what it's about. And it's showing that there are people in our little corner of the internet that have talent and are able to create something that people want and they have a demand for. And that's, to me, what it's about. That's what it's about. That's what I would love for more of us, like-minded people, to give it a shot, especially in the entertainment stuff. The fact that there's, we're starting to see a little small kind of slither of people in the hip-hop scene being alternative to that. I think that's a little cool, but there should be way more people in the entertainment space that just say, I'll just do it myself. I'll just do it myself. Let me at least give it a shot. So, again, I'm blessed to be in the situation. I'm thankful to be in the situation. I appreciate you. I appreciate everybody that went out there and spoke about it with their audiences. That's what helped it do what it did. And word of mouth has been really, that's been our marketing plan. Is like, you know, we rely on the customers, we rely on their people's enthusiasm, and it seemed to work out for us.
No doubt, bro, 100%. Right after this call, I'm gonna go. I see that the website is working for me now. So I tried to buy it on. I tried to buy it on day one, but it was nuts.
We're getting better. We're getting better. So yeah. That's for sure.
Buy some Cloudflare.
Awesome, bro. We're getting better.
Where do people check you out, and where do people check out the comic?
Ripperverse.com. I'm on ericdjelad.com as well, and you can see that as my handle on all different platforms. But really, the where we're trying to funnel the traffic to as we work out all of our technical problems, networking problems, all that. Ripperverse.com is where you're going to want to be. You can get also caught up on the first. You missed out on the first book, that's fine. You can still get the first book. We got plenty of books just go around, so you will be able to get the cover it is that you want. So yeah, Ripperverse.com is where you can find out about the campaign, learn more about it, pick it up in the campaign store. And we start fulfillment on the 31st of next month. There is a pre-order campaign after all, so fulfillment will start on the 31st of next month, and we'll start getting those items out to you all.
That's awesome. As I've said multiple times, and I'm going to hammer this message home one more time on this podcast, everybody listening, you need to understand that if you do not support creators who are doing things that you like, then eventually they can no longer continue to create. So for all the people who are feeling some type of way about the goofiness that's going on, about the rise of wokeness, about people coming after your kids, about all that, any person who is creative, anyone who's an entrepreneur, any business who is in line with your values and who is putting out stuff that you like and who's representing what you like, it is important to support them, right? Not everybody's a grifter. Stop with this calling everyone a grifter nonsense. People are out there doing good work. And if you want them to continue doing it, you have to support it. So I'm going to go buy Eric's comic right now, just like I bought the first one. I'd love appreciate for you listening brother. To do the same. Go check out ripperverse.com. My man, Eric July, appreciate you, bro.
Appreciate you, brother, and thank you for having me again. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunting is destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gonna remember the name. Y'all gonna remember the name.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.